I've got messages. I've got about 10 years worth of messages over there. Stuff I've made up over the years, and during the week I study a lot, and I had a message tonight. As a matter of fact, I had a message for the morning message this morning that I'm going to preach afterwards, Lord willing. And last night I couldn't sleep, so about 2 o'clock in the morning I was over here running off some stuff, and I finally got sleep somewhere a little after two. But this other message I was going to preach this morning, I thought, well, I'll preach that tonight. And then Brent got up and started talking about Melchizedek, and that's one of the most interesting subjects in the Bible, and I really appreciate that. And I'm going to share something with you tonight, Brent, that I think you'll enjoy. I agree with everything you said, but I'm going to show you who Melchizedek was. And I think when I make the case, there'll be no question in your mind as to who he was. And the Bible itself tells us who he was. And indeed, he was not of the line of Levi. He was of an entirely different line. But you'll find it very interesting. And it has to do with the fact the Lord said he was the priest of the Most High God. At that time, that could have only been one man on this earth. It's the old patriarchal system. And he was the high priest of God on this earth. He was the highest patriarch living. You'll find some interesting things about him, and it'll help to explain that without father, without mother, and going through all that. But I first discovered this when I was doing some research in some Jewish literature, and they identified Melchizedek. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, he's a mystical figure. He's a real figure, but you can't identify him. And as I studied it, you can identify him. And it makes it very interesting, and it helps to go along with what you did this morning. I seem to get more messages out of you, Brent, than I do anybody else. So just keep giving these devotionals. I appreciate it. Well, the last week we talked about the fourth trumpet. We talked about the effect of the fourth trumpet, and we talked about how it's related with all of these red lines. During the tribulation period, you're going to have, and I say this reverently, all hell breaks loose. You're going to have a tremendous cloud shroud formed around the entire earth. The Bible is very clear that the Lord will return through a cloud and that every eye on the earth will see him. There will be a cloud that surrounds the entire earth. As I go through this, you'll see more and more how it all fits together, and you'll see God's hand and God's plan and how he intends to build this cloud. We started off and we talked about Revelation 6:12, the effect at that time the sun was black, like looking through a negative, black goat's hair, but you could still see the outline of it. The moon took on a blood-red color, but it was clearly visible. By the time Revelation 8:12 came along, which is the fourth trumpet, and the fourth angel sounded, you could see the sun was smitten, the third part of the moon, the third part of the stars. We went through that and covered that last week. And then we went on into Revelation 9 and 2 and talked about the effect of these volcanic eruptions here, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And finally, eventually, at the end of the tribulation period, we discovered that immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven. This is toward the very end of the tribulation period, when there will not be any light from the heavenly bodies because of this great thick cloud shield. It gets thicker and thicker during the tribulation period. And then finally we covered in verse 30, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Christ is going to break through this great cloud shield, and before I'm finished with this, you'll see exactly why I believe that. I'm reviewing very quickly because I showed you all these volcanic statistics from different sources, the volcanic disasters, the volcanic eruptions. I showed you how they've been showing a fantastic increase ever since about 1948, even more so. I showed you the Global Volcanism Network eruption activity after 1967 among notable volcanoes. Then I showed you activity among all volcanoes. I showed you how it tremendously increased. This is Volcanoes of the World, Geoscience Press, Science Volume 264. We covered that very thoroughly last Sunday. And then we talked about Sodom and Gomorrah. And we used Luke 17:29-31 and indicated that when Jesus returns, it's going to be just like it was when Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, when the Son of Man is revealed, when he comes at the end of the tribulation period with the saints to bring all those he has raptured out previously back with him. And we talked about how all this activity, volcanic activity, thousands of Sodom and Gomorrahs would be going on all over the earth. For those of you who weren't here last Sunday, I realize that's a very quick review. But the Bible is very clear that when Jesus returns, there will be a tremendous cloud shield around the entire earth. And you'll see numerous scriptures that validate that. I don't mean just one or two, and as time progresses in this lectures on Sunday morning, you'll see exactly why I know that what I'm telling you is true. Here we have the ash-laden clouds below Guatemala's Fuego volcano. I want you to notice it says, suspended particles crimsoned the northern hemisphere sunsets for months. Crimson is a red color. The first thing that happens when you have a volcanic eruption, if it's vertical, the question that should be asked, did it penetrate the tropopause level? They all do, just about. And so when you go up through the tropopause level, it gets up into an area where there is no moisture, or at least absolute minimum. And at that level, then you cannot get moisture to condense on the smoke particles which form the cloud to a sufficient weight, get each one of them to get heavy enough to fall out. They continue to float in the air. They stay up there carried by the jet stream winds just below the tropopause, and they stay up there for prolonged periods of time, and they turn the moon the most beautiful blood red you've ever seen. And when they first come in initially, they make the sun as black as sackcloth of hair. Now, we've been talking about these eruptions. Everywhere you saw one of those red lines on the chart, and I'm showing you the Mid-Atlantic Ridge here, I don't expect tens and twenties of volcanoes. I don't expect hundreds of volcanoes. I expect thousands of volcanoes. I think they're going to be going off all over the world. That may seem strange. That may seem fantastic, and it may seem like, well, that couldn't happen. But the Lord said this will be a time like there never was on this earth and never was again. What causes earthquakes? It's the tension and pressure between the tectonic plates as they rub alongside one another and a sudden release occurs. Well, what is that sudden release? Release of pressure? What's caused the pressure? They've been moving and sliding along one another for a long time. Now, what would happen if all that pressure and tension were released? You wouldn't have any earthquakes. That's why during the millennial reign, you won't have very many earthquakes. Because all that tension and pressure is going to be released during the tribulation period, and all hell is going to be released on the earth. Now, let's talk a little bit about the way God put the atmosphere together. One of the things that we should never lose sight of is this. The same God who wrote these prophecies is the same God who made the atmosphere, who made the earth, what's under it, on it, and above it, and everything in space. He's going to take what he owns, operates, and controls that he made himself, and he's going to use that to fulfill his own prophecy by his own power. We're told in Revelation 6:12, when he opens the sixth seal, there's a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. When Mount St. Helens first went off, that's exactly what happened until the smoke cloud actually got so thick that you couldn't see the sun anymore. You couldn't see the moon anymore. The moon turned red all over the United States during this eruption because the cloud, one volcano, wasn't enough to thicken, and you could see the moon blood red. And you could see the outline of the sun through it, but it was like looking through a negative. Now in Revelation 8:7, the first angel sounded, there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. That's when the eruptions really start to get intense. They start occurring back on Revelation 6:12, but by the time the first trumpet blows, you're going to have all kind of volcanic eruptions, and it's going to actually start to affect the earth's atmosphere. It has to. Now, you see here what they call ejecta, cubic meters of ejecta. What we're talking about, let's just call it cubic meters of smoke cloud. You notice here in the Krakatoa eruption of 1883, you had 18 cubic kilometers of cloud particles blasted up into our atmosphere. Notice Mount St. Helens, how small and insignificant that is. Tambora, probably the greatest eruption of all time, had about 80 cubic kilometers of cloud particles. It blew straight up in the atmosphere. Now, once that gets above the tropopause level, it stays there for prolonged periods of time. Don and I are both professional meteorologists. We were trained for that profession. We spent a great deal of time involved in it. So Don can tell you that what I'm going to show you is the way the atmosphere is constructed. When you go up through the atmosphere, way up there eventually, you're going to come into what's known as a temperature inversion zone. The temperature inversion zone is the breaking point of the tropopause. That's where the tropopause is. The temperature gradually increases as you go aloft. Why is that important? It means as the temperature increases, you have a higher temperature up here than you do down underneath it. Here comes the smoke up through it. Well, what happens whenever you have warmer temperatures and something blown up through it? It puts a cap on the atmosphere. You have the jet stream blowing below the tropopause level or the higher winds. And so these smog particles are carried all over the whole earth. Since there is very little moisture there, in order to build up on the particles, make them heavy enough to fall out, they continue to float around the earth, and sometimes they can stay up there for years. The El Chicán eruption occurred in 1982. Notice Mount St. Helens was a side eruption. Yeah, it put some stuff up above the tropopause, but not nearly as much as El Chicán. El Chicán is a volcano in Mexico. And I think within the next several years, you'll see that one go off outside of Mexico City. El Chicán eruption shot straight up through the tropopause level. Now, when you come up to the tropopause level, that's where your temperature inversion is. And it flattens out. Now, normally, it's very hard for air to rise above the tropopause level naturally because you've got a temperature inversion cap. And you know that air has to be warmer than the air it's moving into, lighter, in order to continue to rise. But if you've got air up there that's warmer, and this is colder underneath it, then the cold air is not going to rise through it naturally. However, if you have a volcanic eruption, wham! There's a mechanical forcing, a driving of that up through the tropopause level that God put there for many different reasons. But once he mechanically blasts through it, the very level he made, then it has to stay up there for a long time. El Chicán's now global cloud consists mostly of sulfuric acid aerosols. Blocking and diffusing sunlight, they may lower world temperature by a quarter of a degree Celsius or more in 1983. Effects on local weather will be difficult to assess since temperatures fluctuate briefly every year. Whenever this goes above the tropopause level, it stays up there for a very long time because the jet stream normally runs just below the tropopause level and it carries these particles all over the earth. Notice this particular diagram. Down in the up in the polar regions, North Pole, South Pole, the tropopause is very low. And so anytime you'd have a volcanic eruption there, the cloud layer would be much lower. When you move down to the middle level altitudes, which is where we are, the volcanic eruption would blow through the tropopause and the particles would be maintained here. When you get down to the tropical tropopause, Don, you remember in school we used to have that statement, the typical tropical tropopause. You remember that? Typical tropical tropopause. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Well, whenever the volcanic eruption occurs in the middle latitude, the tropical tropopause is much higher. But if it blows through that and gets up here in the stratosphere, you can have these particles last up there and stay up there for a full year, up to 2 years. God made this. God wrote those prophecies. God said a cloud would be there. God said a lot of other things in his word, and they all fit together perfectly. And you're going to see some of those things unveiled as we go through this particular series. But perhaps the heaviest polluters of the stratosphere are volcanic eruptions. Everybody's always concerned about the ozone layer being destroyed by different types of particles released from different types of chemicals, fluorocarbons for one. But perhaps the heaviest polluters of the atmosphere are volcanic eruptions. Lofting an ash cloud laden with sulfur dioxide perhaps 12 miles, a major eruption can shroud an entire hemisphere in a veil of particles that reduces sunshine and lowers ground temperatures. So what I'm telling you is not some, this is an idea, this is a theory, this is a hypothesis. No. This is what happens when you have a volcanic eruption. Now, the only thing that's a premise on my part, if these eruptions occur and the Bible indicates they will, then you're going to have a cloud shroud build up. How does one work? Well, this is down in the Lesser Antilles, and here you see St. Vincent Island. This is the St. Vincent eruption. It was a dandy. It blew smoke all the way up into the stratosphere. Initially, you see on this chart how the smoke looked. Now, let's take a look at what happened to that smoke. But before we do, let's talk about something else that seems crazy, but it is true. I used to have a hard time in physics trying to teach some of the kids in class about specific gravity and other things, and some things are very difficult. But this is the one that just on the surface doesn't appear to be correct. Whenever a volcanic eruption occurs, it actually goes up here above the tropopause into the stratosphere, up above that temperature inversion. That's one of the things that keeps it up there, mechanically blown up there. It actually starts increasing once it gets up there. How? Even after the volcano stops erupting, because the particles that are in there have a certain elemental composition of atoms, and they start merging with the other atoms, And actually, it spreads out and at times thickens even after the volcano has stopped erupting. That's a very hard thing to grasp. It's a very hard thing to believe. But take a look at this chart. We're taking a look at where this moved. It started right here at this red dot. Calculated with trajectory at the 50 millibar level, 20.7 kilometers, for the period 19 to 22nd April. The starting point for the trajectory is based on the litter of 18 April. High altitude pressure map at the 70 millibar level on 0600 local central time on 26 April 1979. The crosshatch area shows the position of the stratospheric plume. The heights shown are geopotential latitudes. When I was in the National Security Agency, this is one of the things I did. I had to forecast the movement of thermonuclear blasts. Whenever the Russians would launch a thermonuclear blast on Novaya Zemlya Island, it would always go above the tropopause level. I would have to predict when it would go across Russia, where it would come out in the Pacific Ocean, so that we could launch planes out of Alaska. They would go, and they would have special radiation protection built into the plane, and they would have special shields that they would catch the radiation on so they could tell what kind of a blast it was. So this just doesn't work on volcanoes. It works on all types of anything that's shot up either by thermonuclear reaction, which is man's discovery of what God already knew, and it pushes a smoke cloud up there, and they move like this. You can see here how it's moved according. These lines here are line contour lines, and it generally shows, and they're drawn a line along lines of equal millibar pressure, but it's way up high, and you can see how this particle has moved along these lines from here to here along the blue line. You can see how it is spread out here. Now, that's one volcano. But you're going to have thousands of volcanoes going off all over this earth. Now, you may say, well, I don't believe there's that many. Okay, let's say hundreds. I know at least it'll be hundreds. And I'm going to guarantee you that when they go off, God has constructed the atmosphere to where they have to build this cloud plume. When I first started telling people about this, back in 1978, a lot of them thought I was crazy. I guess some of them now are convinced of it. But as time has passed since 1978, this cotton picking Discovery Channel and all these different scientific programs you see on television has validated and substantiated everything that I initially taught. These were things that scientists were beginning to understand back in the 70s, but they had not yet been unveiled to the general public. So it looked like as time passed that I was a prophet or something. But I'm not a prophet. The law and the prophets were until John, but I am an interpreter of the Word of God. So this is what happens as fallout from angry volcanoes spreads. Volcanic soot and acid vapor from recent eruptions around the world are choking the Earth's atmosphere. It tells about these things, these huge clouds. Such incidents have added to rising concern about rumblings around the Ring of Fire, a volcano and earthquake zone encircling the Pacific Basin. The surge in eruptions and earthquakes near volcanoes is a source of worry to scientists who fear that more destructive seismic fireworks could be in store. They have no idea how much is in store. One region of special concern is in an area southeast of Yosemite National Park in Southern California, where U.S. officials have issued a volcano watch, an alert to residents that an eruption may be impending. Scientists say the ground there has risen significantly in recent months, accompanied by earth tremors and soundings showing that molten magma has risen from 8 miles underground to as close as 2 miles below the surface. The most devastating recent blast in North America occurred in early April near El Chicón. Volcano abruptly came to life near Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. The residue is still in evidence, a band 12 to 18 miles high circling the northern hemisphere from the Panama Canal north to Charleston, South Carolina. Patches of the cloud have also been detected even further north. It turns the moon blood red. It has brought orange and purple sunsets to the southern half of the U.S., and some areas report seeing colored rings around the sun. The lunar eclipse on July 6th was darkened by the volcanic cloud. Astronomers at Kitt Peak National Observatory in Arizona say light from celestial objects has been diminished by as much as 40% because of the cloud, including the eclipse. It stayed up there for a long time. Is there any of it left? Oh, just a few particles here and there. But it does eventually disappear. But it stays there a long time. Monster cloud has scientists and all. This was interesting. At the time, they didn't know where it came from. I did. It came from the Mount Erebus in down in the South Pole. And when it went off, this is what it did because it had a low tropopause. Monster cloud has scientists and all. San Francisco, a huge cloud of volcanic debris stretching 13,000 miles across two oceans with the potential of altering the Earth's climate, has atmosphere scientists buzzing with excitement. Its size, density, and location more than 13 miles above the planet. The cloud already has reduced sunlight, particularly over Hawaii, and appears on satellite pictures as a grayish-white haze. Scientists say the cloud stretching from the Baja California across the Pacific and the Indian Oceans to Saudi Arabia was formed because of debris from Chicano volcano in southern Mexico. I think a lot of it came from the southern hemisphere. Says the monster cloud is quite a big deal and far surpasses in size, height, and density the so-called mystery cloud of volcanic debris that appeared in January. The cloud particularly has the potential from some climatic change in the next 6 months, but it's hard to get a feeling on how much effect Toon said. I'm trying to establish the pattern that when I tell you volcanic eruptions build clouds that stay there for a long time, take a long time to erupt out, that you'll know that what I'm telling you is the truth. If you just believed it because I was your pastor, I'd appreciate that, but I'd much rather appreciate that you believe it because the Bible says such a thing is going to happen, and God, who wrote the Bible, has constructed the atmosphere in such a way that it must happen. Whenever the eruptions occur, they blow up through the tropopause. This is Mount Pinatubo's toll. Mount Pinatubo was one of the best eruptions we've had in a long time. After lying dormant for more than 600 years, it let loose with a load of debris that is estimated to be 2 to 3 times that of Mexico's El Chicón eruption in 1982. El Chicón, the biggest eruption in 50 years, blew out at least 6 million tons of dust and gas. Measuring less than a micron across, these particles are so tiny they will stay aloft for 3 to 4 years. Within 21 days, high-speed stratospheric winds had spread a thin layer of the reflected particles into a ring running clear around the equator. This was quite a blast. The blast, which has been equated with 2,000 to 3,000 Hiroshima bombs, blew millions of tons of sulfuric dioxide, dust, debris, and ash miles into the atmosphere. And much of what went up won't come down for 3 or 4 years. All the burning oil lamps in Kuwait don't hold a candle to it in terms of environmental impact. According to Dr. Larry Stowe, an atmospheric scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the cloud continues to spread out from the tropics, reaching to about 30 degrees north latitude down to about 50 degrees south latitude at the time this is written. The most serious long-term effect of the cloud is likely to be increased destruction of the ozone layer. The aerosol particles in Pinatubo's cloud caused the chlorine from man-made chlorofluorocarbons to become more reactive. Within the cloud from El Chicón's eruption, ozone was depleted by 10 to 15%. The problem is that in many of these different eruptions, you have other chemical elements that actually attract the molecules off of the ozone layer, cause them to merge and reform oxygen, and oxygen won't shield man from thermonuclear radiation. And this is one of the reasons for those boilsome greases and so forth. Now, to show you how this cloud layer worked, first of all, this shows the ozone hole in 1983, 1985, 1991. You can see how it is continuing to increase because these particles stay up there for a long time, and every time there's a major volcanic eruption, you get more eating of the O3 ozone molecules in the stratosphere, and you get them depleted to oxygen, and oxygen won't shield us from ultraviolet radiation. O3, there's ozone will, and it's causing a lot of skin cancer all down in the southern hemisphere where most of the volcanoes are. Now, this shows the cloud formed. Pinatubo went off right here. And when Pinatubo went off, then it began to spread away from Pinatubo. Notice the cloud began to spread in this direction. This is week 4. Week 6, notice it has spread from here all the way across into the Pacific Ocean on the other side of the United States. Notice by the 6th week, it has gone all the way around and come back on this side. Notice it isn't here, but notice it's now coming back in here over the same area that it came out of some 4 weeks before. So it forms a cloud shield. That was one volcanic eruption. It had a cloud shield above the stratosphere that stretched around the entire Earth, one volcano. So I've got no problem during the tribulation period with looking at this and telling you without hesitation that when all these volcanic eruptions occur, the volcanoes will come up on the land first because naturally you can see them there because the others are submarine, they're under the water. But after those on the land occur, which was on the first trumpet, then God suddenly lets us see the volcanoes that are coming up on the second trumpet, and the smoke coming up out of these is going to build a cloud shield around the entire earth. It'll work something like this. The same God, as you see on this diagram, who made the earth, made the atmosphere above it. You see the tropopause level, and you see the stratosphere level, and you see these volcanoes going off all over the earth along these red lines. That cloud is going to build up above the tropopause level. At first, the effect will be that when it comes across, it'll be fairly thin. You'll be able to see the moon, but it'll be blood red. You'll also be able to see the sun, but it'll be like black goat's hair, looking at it through something dark like a negative. Eventually, as the volcanic eruptions continue in the tribulation period, after the sixth chapter of Revelation, when the place first starts to move and the first great earthquake in the book of Revelation is reported, eventually it will thicken more and more and more and more. Finally, you won't be able to see them about a third of the time. Eventually, it will form a complete cloud shroud that will encircle the entire earth. Now, next Sunday, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some very strange things in Zechariah that are only strange because when they were written, God's Holy Spirit wrote through Zechariah, and Zechariah had no idea why this would occur. He said it would occur, and God said it would occur through Zechariah, but Zechariah just wrote down what God said. Now we're going to see that some things that appear to be very strange. How can it be night at midnight? How is that possible? How can it be that way all over the world? Well, these questions are easily answered if you look at the book of Revelation and you see how God has used this. We're going to be taking a look at a scroll, and we're going to be talking about what happens when a scroll is opened up. We're going to be talking about the cloud shield that you see here. It will actually be the cloud that surrounds the entire earth by the end of the tribulation period up in the stratosphere. And then we're going to talk about the effect of light being refracted. All these things are scientific principles. They are not theory. They are hardcore scientific principles that always give the same result. God is that way. God is unchanging. And I think you'll find it very interesting next Sunday when we start to talk about heaven departs as a scroll when it is rolled together. I think you'll find it interesting.